Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast.
Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts Amelia
and Beth.
And I would say of all of the episodes we have recorded so far this season, the closest we have had to the date it comes out.
Sure is. We're actually in August now.
We are in August and this comes out in August and that is wonderful. And as we've said before, there's been a lot of episodes this season that we recorded back in June and July. So if you have been sending us drive-by ghostings and we have not read them, we got them. We've enjoyed them. And we're going to read them on another show. It's just, you know, everything's not really synced up this season.
And that's okay. Because when this comes out, I'm going to be in Mexico, laying somewhere by some water, drinking some nice little frilly, fruity drink.
Woohoo.
And just enjoying my first vacation since the pandemic. And we all know how Beth loves her vacations.
Yeah, Mexico. That's going to be nice, too. It's going to be warm.
Yeah, I think really it was 91 warm. Degrees there today.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I'm so excited to just go. It's like going on a cruise, but I don't have to get on a boat. And I know that that sounds so weird because I really love boats. But I do. I have this thing when I get off the cruise ship where like I rock back and forth for like the next week and it's really uncomfortable, but whatever. Totally worth it.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Of course.
All inclusive. So when you eat dinner there, do they charge you or you don't?
No, it's all paid for up front.
Oh, interesting.
There may be like some things that aren't included in the quote all inclusive. You know, like if you want like the lobster flambé, like that might not be included, but like all the regular restaurants, all the buffets, all the bars, pools, activities, non-motorized activities, I believe it said, are all included. So I can bring my audiobooks and just sit by the pool and
work on your tan.
Yeah.
Good work on your tan. Got all nice and tan.
I'm currently stockpiling sunblock. So this week, we thought that we would do something a little cultural.
Sophisticated.
Yeah, very, very.
A little highbrow, a little higher brow than ghost hunting in New England usually goes.
But not much higher.
up and away to haunted museums this week.
Yes, and it's not even just haunted museums of New England. In fact, do we have any in
New England? I don't think we have a single story from New England.
No,
it's
so
just haunted museums of America.
So if you're like me and you are just dying to go on your vacation and maybe you want to swing by a haunted museum or two, Amelia and I have a few that you might want to check out.
There you go.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. This week, what I am here to talk about first is the Haunted Cleveland Museum of Art. Mwah!
That's located in Cleveland, right?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Nice.
I've been seeing 111 everywhere, and I didn't even realize that this is at 11,150 East Boulevard in Cleveland, Ohio. 11150.
That's like a block and a half from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right?
I don't know. I have no idea. Have you been there?
No.
Oh, I didn't even know it was in Ohio.
The only thing that I know about Cleveland is it's where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was. Oh, I know a second thing. It's where the Drew Carey Show took place.
Yeah, I know that.
That's the extent. And the Cleveland, they have a baseball team.
Cavaliers.
No, they're
Browns.
Oh, well, I was thinking of the Cincinnati Reds, actually.
Dang.
But your answers are also accurate.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa, I'm a sports fanatic. Okay. Watch out, world. All right. So the Cleveland Museum of Art was founded in 1913 and is one of the world's most comprehensive art museums, as well as one of the Midwest's principal civic and cultural institutions. The museum holds impressive accolades, one of which being it is considered by many to be the most haunted museum in the art world.
Ooh.
Ooh, spooky. Yes. While art enthusiasts and starry-eyed art students might show up to a new gallery opening, hoping to get a glimpse of their favorite artist, museum employees got an otherworldly experience the final day of installing the painting of the modern garden, Monet to Matisse, in 2015. A photograph taken that day shows a man standing on the museum interior balcony looking down on the exhibit. The only catch is there was no man standing there at the time. Never mind a man bearing a striking resemblance to the forefather of French Impressionism. It might seem suspicious that such a prominent museum would be sharing photographs with news media of what appears to be a ghost of one of the most famous artists of all time right before a show opening during the spooky month of October. But according to staff members, it's not the first time an apparition has appeared to them.
Hmm.
An oil painting by Jacques-André Joseph Avide, previously on display, seemed to also be haunted. It is.
Can I just stop you for a second? You did a really great job saying that name.
Thank you so much. I went to art school and I minored in art history while I was there. Yeah, I was thinking about this. This is an aside. I was thinking about this the other day and yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I'm like, as of this summer marks 10 years of me working in the food industry full time, making smoothies, being the little smoothie queen. And I think I'm just going to become an artist again. I'm like, I have this art degree. I was okay at it. Why don't I just become an artist? Couldn't be that hard. All right. Back to the story. It is said that the man in the painting, portrait of Jean-Gabriel Duthiel at the sighting of the Treaty of Vienna, has been seen admiring the work of art and causing a plethora of mechanical and electrical issues in the galleries until the painting was placed back into storage. In the original museum space, known as the 1916 building, many claim to see an intriguing man walking around the shadows of the building wearing a tweed jacket, complete with elbow patches and a folder tucked underneath his arm.
He just sounds like a history professor.
Yes, an art history professor. When museum employees went through the old photographs buried in the archives, they were very stunned to see the very same man looking back at them from the photos. The man in the pictures was William Methuesen Milliken, the museum's former gallery director. While it's not unusual for former directors to visit after they're retiring from their careers, Milliken had died in 1978.
Mwah, Season 5 is the season of sound effects.
Yeah. Pickle, pickle, pickle. And I got a lot of that information from mentalfloss.today.com and clevelandart.org. Boop, 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 boop. And that is the haunted activities of the Cleveland Museum of Art.
Awesome.
Located at 11150 East Boulevard in Cleveland, Ohio.
Is it free to get in or do you have to pay?
I don't know. I would assume you have to pay.
But sometimes there's free nights. Like when we were kids, we would always go to
the Cleveland Museum of Art.
Well, as kids, we would always go to the MFA on Wednesday nights. Mom would pack us all into the car and drive us into town, park for free on the street, of course, and make us walk around the art galleries.
Oh, nice.
No.
What do you mean? No, I loved going to the museum when I was a kid.
When you were like 8, you liked to walk around and look at
paintings? I loved it. My mom would take us all the time.
I didn't even know that the Museum of Fine Arts had fun stuff because all we would ever go do is look at the rooms full of old paintings. And my feet hurt just thinking about it.
No, I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I still love it. I love it to this day. I go all the time. I used to have a yearly membership, but I canceled a few years ago because I just wasn't going because I was at work. But maybe part of me being an artist is re-upping my yearly membership.
There you go. I have since decided that I very much like the Museum of Fine Arts because I found out that they have all the Greek and Roman pottery and they have the
mummy room.
The mummies and the sarcophagi, and there's all sorts of very interesting stuff there. I have never, ever, ever been interested in paintings or even photographs. I'm sorry. But like actual like stuff, it makes me happy. I'm like, ancient people touched these things. Like they used them for stuff. They painted their neat little symbols on them, and I think that the stuff is definitely more interesting than the paintings. Okay, so I am going to take you away from Cleveland, Ohio, and over to the Big Apple of New York, New York. And we are going to go and check out the Museum of Modern Art, or the MoMA, as I will refer to it, because the Museum of Modern Art is too many syllables to have to keep saying over and over.
Can I relay a nice memory?
Sure.
I have been to the MoMA once. It was very brief. Your brother took me, Brendan.
Oh, that's very nice.
It was very nice. When I was a senior in high school, Your brother drove me to New York to look at Pratt, his alma mater, to see if I might be interested in attending there. And then we went to the MoMA.
Oh, so I really don't have a lot on the Museum of Modern Art. And it's hard sometimes to find a lot of good information looking for ghosts or haunting in a museum because, you know, artists like to name their works with strange titles, or they base their art on memories or events that they found haunting. So I did learn a bit about some artists who have created pieces called haunted or ghostly, but not enough that I could actually recite any of it. So I'm going to leave that alone. All right. Anyway, so the MoMA has a history of having ghostly encounters and spooky happenings all over the place. And they've been seen by lots of people. I came across a short documentary featuring the staff at the MoMA talking about it, the experiences that they've had there. And I have to tell you, the hair on my arm stood up a little, like as I was watching it, because they're showing you different places in the museum. And they're just talking about the things that happened there. Okay, so the most famous ghostly resident at the MoMA is the Lady in White, or sometimes she's just referred to as the MoMA ghost. She's your typical lady in white ghost. She's a white woman. She floats above the ground in her long flowing dress. She doesn't speak to anyone or do anything other than just appear suddenly, float about, look at the art, and then disappear when someone tries to approach her. She has no discernible backstory, and I couldn't find any theories about who she is or why she's there. She's harmless, and she's not really too scary, but she's seen in lots of areas around the museum, in the galleries, on escalators, and even in the theater. So what interests me a lot more about the MoMA is less about the MoMA ghost, and it's more about some of the random spooky activity that the guards and the staff report. So like all older buildings, there are some maintenance issues that need to be addressed. And at one night, there were a pair of maintenance staff working alone in the boiler area, and they were terrorized by an unseen presence that was banging on the door. It was frantic banging and kicking. It was like they were attempting to get into the room that the men were in. And at first they thought it was a joke. And upon opening the door, they saw there was no one there. They closed the door and the banging began again. You know, just this frantic kicking, and like somebody was really trying to break down the door and get into the room. The two maintenance men, you know, like grown men, they proceeded to just nope right out the other side of the room, and they didn't go back in there for the rest of the night. So they were able, I guess, to get back in the morning and finish up what they were doing. But it makes me wonder, in circumstances like that, if that spirit was actually warning them of something. You know, were they supposed to get out without getting hurt? Was the frantic noise some sort of an alarm bell that maybe saved the men from some terrible fate or injury? And it's not like we're ever going to know. But sometimes I think about things like that. Like I'll listen to that little voice that tells me, slow down, or you need to leave now. But I don't think I've had any sort of confirmation that it was the right thing to have done. That proverbial out-of-control bus has never blown a red light in front of me right after my intuition to slow down happened. Although I have slowed down from a steady 85 to 63 for no reason whatsoever, and then seen a cop waiting to give out tickets. So I think that should count.
Agreed.
Anyway, it's a museum, right? So you know that it has a bunch of objects laying around. And now usually we can talk about the ancient relics that have been stolen from their origin countries and cultures, mummies, pottery, stuff like that. But the Museum of Modern Art is a little light on ancient artifacts because they're much more interested in, you know, modern stuff.
Because they're so modern.
Right. They have art installations and other goodies that the art-loving ghosts like to experiment with. The staff report that there are constant flickering lights that turn on and off and at random. I would chalk it up to some of those newfangled motion sensor lights or timers, but the staff insists that that's not the cause. The spirits there also love to move objects, not just the art, but paperwork and files that go along with running a world-class museum. One of the things that I did come across in some of my research this week was about the idea that you don't have to have died in a place in order to haunt it. And so it makes me wonder, are some of these ghosts that are turning up at the MoMA, are they just people who loved art in life and they just want to hang around and still be with the art, see the things that they like to see? They want to check out, you know, what's new and happening. So I don't know. It's just another thing that I got thinking about this week. It has a large theater setup, and there are some weird things that happen in the theater and to the theater staff. The heavy curtain that pulls across the stage, it will open and close of its own accord at times. The MoMA ghost is known to hang around on the stage and to sit in the audience. But my favorite one is the film projector crew of two people saw a gray figure in the projector room with them one night. They described it as a man-sized gray spectral figure who just appeared from nowhere, stood there for a few minutes, and then faded away. The projectionist telling the story thought she was overtired and needed to head home when her colleague turned to her, completely white and just shaking, said, "Did you see that too?" I always think that it's a little bit more credible when more than one person saw it. So that's the MoMA. You can visit daily, but you need to reserve or buy your timed tickets in advance, you know, COVID. Adults are $25. Children 16 and under are free. There's a student discount for $14 with your student ID, or if you're a member, it's free. However, there are no promises of encounters with ghosts once you get there.
Good story, Beth.
Oh, gee, thanks.
Okay, I really like my next story. However, I know I'm going to say the name of this museum wrong, and I'm hoping Beth will know how to say it right. People have told me how to say it, and I know I say it wrong a lot, but I'm going to try to say it right. It's one of the stories I did when I did the Don't Take Pictures magazine thing on haunted museums, and I just love this story. I love this story, Beth.
Okay.
And it's the Museum of the Albemarle. Albemarle? Albemarle. I don't know. How do you say it? I don't know. Albemarle.
Albemarle?
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 Oh, that's what I mean. I don't know. If you know how to say this, right on into the show. Okay. The Museum of, and I always want to call it the Abe Murray.
Okay. The Abe Murray sounds good to me.
When I read it in my head, that's how it sounds in my head. And it isn't, that is definitely wrong. Okay.
That's cool.
So. The Museum of the Albemarle first opened in 1967 as a northeast branch of the North Carolina Museum of History. While a museum with halls filled with artifacts from sunken ships and those closely related to history of nearby Masonic temples might be enough to give some tourists an unsettling feeling, the real hauntings began after the newly constructed building was added on.
Did they build it over a Native American burial ground?
Was added on the waterfront next to a local cemetery. Bum, bum, bum.
What kind of cemetery? A Native American cemetery?
Nah, just a regular cemetery. Despite what one might
assume.
They
already took all the Native American bodies out of?
No. Despite what one might assume, it's not an old sailor who haunts the halls of the Albemarle, but a local Elizabeth City historian who spent the last years of his life as part of the Rose Buddies, a volunteer group that he had co-created, whose members greet all visitors from the waterfront of the museum. So basically the Rose Buddies, it's like for old people to like give them something to do. So it's like older people in town who just love being in that town and they love the history and they'll greet you and say, hi, how you doing? And makes you feel good, you know?
Sure.
Prior to his death in 2007, the 93-year-old Fred Fearing swore to those around him that he would haunt the halls of the museum, watching over it and the many artifacts that had been slated in his will to reside there when his time came to pass. Employees have witnessed many unusual occurrences, including hearing a man's voice in the museum long after the last visitors have left for the day. Radios seem to turn on to play old 1930s shows, only to turn off when someone enters the room. And, most notoriously, an impression is often found near the edge of the bed donated to the museum by Fearing, as if someone had just been sitting right on the edge of the mattress. A few months after Fearing's passing, a museum goer found herself engulfed in conversation with an elderly man who told her the history of the whole museum. He began telling the woman about the Rose Buddies and their many traditions. After excusing herself from the conversation to see the exhibits, the woman told the staff at the front desk about her encounter with the elderly man who, quite frankly, had been a little abrupt with her. The staff asked for a description of the gentleman and were shocked to hear her describe Fred Fearing to a T, curt, personality and all. While believing local visitors and tourists alike are intrigued by the idea of the ghost of the Albemarle, the staff is happy to have Fred Fearing there with them. The amount of artifacts he left the museum after his passing were extensive. Curators and exhibit designers are often shocked when pieces, seemingly out of nowhere, show up in very prominent places around the museum exactly when they are needed for their upcoming exhibitions.
Beautiful.
If you would like to visit the Museum of the Albemarle, Abel Merle?
I think we should call it Abley Marley.
Abley Marley? That is at
501
South Water Street in Elizabeth City, North Carolina.
The Abley Marley.
Museum of the Ab Marl. See, I think if you say it with a Southern accent, then it makes sense. Museum of the Ab Marl. I hired a young lady from Mississippi this week, and I could just listen to her talk for hours.
Does she mumble?
No, clear as day. Okay. And she always calls me ma'am, and I don't like it when people call me ma'am because it makes me feel very old. Mm-hmm. Her, I'm like, oh, hey, Chelsea, like, do you think you could like grab me that? And she's like, oh, yes, ma'am, of course. I'm like, oh, I love it. I love it. Sounds so nice. I would love to live down south. We were talking to Christy Parrish, which you all listening to this will hear later in the season. And I love her accent too. I think I could live down south. I do. I'd be there doing like fake Southern accents. Like they'd have real Southern accents. And I'd just be like, hey, y'all.
Okay. So there's a lot more to living in the south than just listening to the accents. I mean, first of all, it's hot and it's muddy.
I like hot. And Paula likes hot. Paul really likes hot.
You would earn a lot less money.
I wouldn't. I'd be an artist either way. Ba-da-da-da-da-ba-da-da-da-da-da.
She's going to be a belly dancer. That's the artist that she's considering becoming.
They couldn't see me wiggle.
Yeah, she just did the I Dream of Jeannie wiggle.
How about this
so
one?
My next story, once Amelia's done making all of her weird bird noises, is actually about the Smithsonian in Washington.
That was a cat.
So the Smithsonian in Washington, for people who are not familiar, is actually not one museum. If you went to Washington and asked, where's the Smithsonian? People would be like, which one? Because it's the Natural History Museum. It's the Museum of Air and Space. It's the museum. There's an art museum. There's so many museums in Washington.
They have orchids.
There's
like
a flower
the largest collection of orchids.
There you go. Yep. I would think that would probably be like a botanical garden as opposed to a museum.
It's inside one of the Smithsonians I went.
Excellent. So the very first building that was the Smithsonian is now referred to as the castle. And it's not even one of the museum places anymore. It's pretty much just an administrative building. And so there was an Englishman named James Smithson, who was the original benefactor. So he has an interesting family story. He was an English aristocrat. Well, his father was anyway. And he was born to his father's mistress. And he was born in Paris so that it was to avoid the illegitimate child scandal. His father refused to let him use his last name. Okay, but in those days, the father had the right to the child, even if it was an illegitimate child or anything like that. And so the father stepped in and took custody of the child once he was born, but then wouldn't let him call himself Smithson. But he sent his son.
This doesn't make any sense.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I know people who came to be in this type of situation, right? And were not given their father's last name. Because the father did not want his wife to know.
Right.
But the father wasn't then like, but you're mine. Like this guy took the kid.
Yes.
He was like, I don't want you to have my name. I don't want the history books to know about this, but I want to keep you.
Yes.
I don't like it.
You know, Ben Franklin did the same thing.
Did he have the kids live with them?
Yeah. He had an illegitimate son that he took from the mother.
Where'd he live?
With Ben Franklin and his wife.
And his wife?
Yeah. Hmm. But he didn't have the Franklin name. So Ben and his wife, they had a child, and I believe that he died of smallpox. That's when they were first coming out with the inoculations for it. And so when he got the inoculation, he just wasn't strong enough to fight it off, and it killed him. And then Ben went over and took the other boy.
That's terrible.
Yeah. I don't think that it was that unusual to happen, but it was certainly terrible. I can't imagine being a mistress to a wealthy person, getting knocked up, and then having the baby stolen from me. That would be horrible.
The whole situation's awful. It's just not a good situation.
No, not at all. All right. So the father did send James off to school and to college. He became a chemist and a mineralogist, right? He studied minerals.
Cool.
I guess. I assume that those are great things to study. He never set foot in the United States. When he died, his father forgave him I guess, for being born over the course of his life, and did eventually allow him to use his name, Smithson. And Smithson inherited some money from him, as well as made a whole bunch of money on his own. And upon his death, he donated all of his money to create a museum in the United States where he had never been. So it was just a very interesting idea. He actually died in 1829 in Genoa, Italy. Okay. And he was buried there. So what is he doing haunting the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., right?
Why did he want to build the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C.?
There are so many great questions about this that I cannot answer. That's one of them. Right. He really wanted to have a museum. And I think that he really wanted his name attached to it. I think that was his big thing. And
but why in America?
Because Europe was already full of museums. America.
Maybe he just really wanted to go. Like, I've always wanted to really go to California, but I've never been. So this I don't have a will. So on this podcast, if I have any money when I die, then Paul has to start an art gallery for me in LA and I'll haunt it.
And you'll go haunt it. Okay.
And I'll haunt it. And then I'll always be in LA, where I've always wanted to go.
Because you're an artist.
And I'm dramatic.
So there's kind of a really creepy story about how it is that James Smithson came to be actually at the Smithsonian Museum that he never visited in life. Alexander Graham Bell, that great stealer of patents, right? You might remember him as stealing the patent for the telephone. So in 1903, Alexander Graham Bell heard about Smithson's original money being used to create the whole museum. And he thought, well, it seems unreasonable that this guy never saw the museum. So Alexander Graham Bell arranged to have Smithson's body dug up.
No, don't do it. Don't do it.
From his grave in Genoa, Italy, shipped across the Atlantic, and had him in 1904 reinterred here in the Smithsonian in Washington. So then Smithson's ghost is seen so frequently in the castle that in 1973, his body was exhumed a second time so that they could check and make sure that he was in the casket.
Cool.
His bones were all there. There was no report on whether his soul or his spirit or anything like that was in the casket. So we have no idea. But he's one of the guys that haunts the Smithsonian Castle.
I wanna haunt people that badly that they have to dig me up to make sure I'm dead. That's the type of ghost I'm gonna be. That is. And I truly believe if you say what kind of ghost you're going to be, you come back and be that ghost. Because I have a friend who passed away and she said she'd like steal another one of my friend's necklaces all the time. And she died. And sure enough, all the necklaces kept moving to other sides of the room.
Weird.
So when I die, I'm going to haunt you so bad, Beth, that you have to dig me back up to make sure I'm dead.
I'm going to cremate you.
No.
Yeah.
It's not your call. It's Paul's call.
Paul will be dead by then.
No, what? That's terrible. Why would you say that? Don't say that.
He's 10 years older than you.
He's 8 years older than me. No, he's not going to die.
Why do you assume that he would outlive? He also might not have the best diet.
He does not have the best diet.
I think I have a leg to stand on by saying that you're going to outlive him.
But I'm more of a daredevil.
Whatever. You're not going to haunt me.
There'll
be so many better.
You're also 8 years older than me.
Yeah.
So you could say if Paul's going to be dead by the time I'm dead, you would be too. Don't say that.
Okay. So let's talk about our next creepy ghost that shows up at the Smithsonian. So next up, we have Spencer Fullerton Baird, B-A-I-R-D. And that's a very fun name for the very first curator of the Smithsonian Museum. So Mr. Baird, he died in 1887. He has a tendency to walk the castle and then he just disappears. As people approach, he's just walking around, minding his business. And if you pay no attention to him, he'll keep walking around. But if you go up to him to be like, what are you doing? Gone.
Ooh, spooky.
There are night watchmen who report seeing him all the time. And the next one I want to talk about is a man named Fielding B. Meek.
Wait, what's his name?
Fielding B. as in Beth. Meek. M-E-E-K.
That's not the weird part to me. The weird part is Fielding.
I think his whole name is fabulous.
It's not a first name. Fielding?
Whatever.
That's crazy.
He lived in the 1800s. He was a paleontologist.
Cool.
Right. And so for those of you who are not really up on your sciencey terms, I'll see if I can make it relatable to you. Your friend Ross from Friends, he was also a paleontologist. So there's somebody that studies dinosaur bones and nobody really knows what they do. So anyway, he actually lived in the Smithsonian Castle with his cat.
Why? You didn't live there? There are bedrooms?
Not so much. I'm going to get to that right now. He had a job, right? He grew up in Indiana, and he worked for a bunch of different, like, sciencey different things. And he went on different excursions and archaeological digs, and he found lots of stuff. And he was a pretty big deal. So he ended up friends with the curator or the secretary or whoever it is that's, like, ultimately in charge of the Smithsonian Museum. Okay, so he was described as an odd kind of guy. He loved chatting with all the scientists and visitors, but he was eccentric, right? He was just kind of, he was a weird, weird dude. He still comes back to chat with visitors. I think this is similar to your guy in Abel Marley, who just shows up and just wants to talk to the people. So he befriended the curator, the secretary, whatever, of the Smithsonian, and the curator invited him to come and work there. He was like, well, you know, I'm not really sure, you know, I don't have anywhere to live. So they made a deal that Meek would come and work at the Smithsonian in exchange for room and board. So he just worked and lived there. He didn't get any money, but he didn't have to go anywhere. He didn't have to do anything. And that was okay with him because he was kind of a weird guy. He was, and this is the most interesting part about, like, chatting with a lot of different scientists. He had issues with being deaf. And I'm not entirely sure what that means. Like, if he was just hard of hearing, was he actually, like, deaf? Did he have, like, intermittent hearing loss that would affect him sometimes?
I don't know.
I know. I couldn't get a straight answer on it.
I don't know.
But I think
I can tell you something interesting, though. Not interesting, but related to this. And that is, I am related to a lot of scientists, and I can tell you straight up, they do not give one F what anyone else has to say, and they would be deaf and just talk to you your ear off for hours. And I would say that that's really a good, you know, not being able to hear and being a scientist who loves to talk is sounds like a great life for a lot of scientists I know. I don't know.
Well, in addition to that, he had tuberculosis.
Ooh, that's not as fun. Did he give everyone at the museum tuberculosis?
Not that I know of. I did not read about any tuberculosis outbreaks. Anyway, so he lived with his deafness and his tuberculosis. He lived at the museum. And this is so funny to me. He had this little tiny room that him and his cat lived in, and it was under the stairs. I just thought that was hilarious.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. So then as time goes on, they decided that he could not live in the Harry Potter room anymore, and they made him move into an actual, like, suite of rooms up in one of the towers, where once he moved up there, his tuberculosis just got progressively worse and worse, and he ultimately died.
I was going to say, I don't know why they didn't make him move into a suite of rooms at the tuberculosis hospital.
He had no money, but I suppose they took lots of indigent people. Anyway, so he died in 1876. So you'll notice that all of the people that are routinely haunting the Smithsonian's castle died before 1900. So another piece of information that I came across was actually an article in the Washington Post from May 13th, 1900.
Cool.
So this is a really old article, and it was called Phantoms of the Museum. And it goes through and it talks about how some of these ghostly presences have been seen in the museum over the years. And I mean, at that point, Baird had only been dead 13 years and Meek had only been dead 24 years. James Smithson wasn't even there yet. They did talk about the fact that he had never been to the museum that he had created, but anyway, so there were so many creepy things happening. Doors opening and closing, books falling off library shelves, lights turning on and off, you know, the typical disembodied screams, footsteps, that in the 1980s, there was an employee at the Smithsonian who held a series of seances looking for more information. The results are unpublished, but it just, to me, that was like, that was crazy. That it's like you have somebody working there that's so interested in what's happening that on their off hours, they come in and do some seances with a bunch of people.
Ooh.
Crazy stuff. So if you want to visit the Smithsonian, whether the castle, well, the castle, I think, is a little bit harder to visit because it's administrative offices. But if you wanted to visit any of the other locations, they're all free. They're all open 365 days a year. And they would all love to have you come and visit them and see all the wonderful stuff that they have.
Cool. Good story, Beth.
Thanks. Not nearly as organized as the first one.
Mike and Lauren are going to the Smithsonian this month. I'll have to have them listen to this episode.
Which Smithsonian?
I have no idea.
You mean they're taking a trip to Washington?
I'm going to D.C., Mike's parents, before they move up here. Mike and Lauren, they bought a house. They're moving up here. They're moving back to Massachusetts. They've been living in Delaware. They're moving back up.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yep. So if we have any spooky people out in Western Mass, which I know we do, go hang out with Mike and Lauren because they need more friends. Okay. Last story. This next story is about UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. UTSA stands for University of Texas at San Antonio. Yeehaw. The University of
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. Institute of Texan Culture was established by Texas legislature in 1965 to serve as a forum for understanding and appreciation of the history of Texas and the many cultures of the state. The 182,000 square foot complex is situated near the Alamo in San Antonio, Texas, and is home to exhibits and outreach programs geared to educate and inspire. A large library filled with historic manuscripts and a historical photography collection that exceeds 3.5 million images. Given the
$1 million.
$3.5 million. Given the Institute's expansive collection, it should come as no surprise that if the museum is haunted, it is haunted by a wide array of specters. Museum directors, visitors, and those represented in displays are just some of those reported to be seen roaming the halls. One of the most dedicated visitors in the history of the institution was Gerald Flitz, a slower individual who was often seen in his favorite blue overalls, counting his change by the back entrance. One morning, a museum employee rushed by Gerald on her way to work, nodding a greeting as she passed, and noticed he was rather dressed up. After getting settled, she asked her coworker if they knew why Gerald was wearing a suit and a blue tie instead of his normal attire. Her question was met with disbelief as they informed her that their favorite regular had passed the Friday before. Later that day, a janitor claimed to see Gerald by the vending machines. Shocked and saddened, he told his coworker that Gerald was wearing the same clothing he had been buried in. While the story of Gerald is one of the most notorious in the museum's history, he has not been seen in almost two decades. His cause of death remains unknown, but many suspect it was self-inflicted and that he wanted to make one final trip to his favorite museum before passing over. While Gerald Fitz seems to have moved on, the ghost of R. Henderson Shuffler is said to still reside within the library. Shuffler was not the original director of the museum, but lived in an apartment just above it. He was also known for his love of books and smoking a cherry pipe, and to this day, his apparition can be spotted in the library, accompanied by the thick smell of cherry smoke.
Yuck.
Oh, I was going to say, that's like my favorite kind. When someone's smoking a pipe, the cherry kind. Yeah, I like it.
No, thank you.
I like it a lot. Since the permanent exhibit, Creation Cosmos, was put on display, the apparition of an indigenous woman has been spotted on multiple occasions. The exhibit brought various artifacts to the museum, including pottery from the Kato Native Americans who once resided in the area. Reports claim the pottery brought with it a spirit who is about 5 feet 4 inches with jet black hair pulled back into a ponytail, wearing a buckskin dress.
How dare they be taller than me?
No one knows exactly who the woman is, but not only can she be seen standing near the exhibit, sometimes employees walking alone hear their names being called from the area she haunts. Perhaps the most intriguing artifact on display, oh, I like this one a lot. This is cool to me. On display is a horse and buggy originally built in 1989, which was a great year as it was the year I graced the planet. And it was built by the Seville Company and shipped to Castroville, Texas, where it became known as the Castroville Hearse. The hearse did its duty taking the dead from funeral homes to their final resting place, but was known to have some other jobs too. During the time of Prohibition, it was utilized to carry bootleg bourbon in a secret compartment built to be covered by the coffins. And now that it has made its way to the Institute of Texan Cultures, it is said that looking after the hearse has become somewhat of a rite of passage for the security guards. Often during the night, the doors will spring open on their own and ominous growls can be heard coming from inside the vehicle. When guards make sure no one is inside and carefully lock the doors up, they'll often walk away only to look back and see the doors wide open once more.
Bum, bum, bum.
The museum refuses to confirm or deny the allegations of spirits or haunted artifacts, but does host an annual Dance with the Dead every October for its members and often features talks and tours with prominent ghost hunters.
Very cool.
And it is located at 801 East Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard, San Antonio, Texas.
Very neat. So I think that of all the museums that we talked about this week, I'm trying to figure out which one I would like to go visit the most.
I actually know which one you'd like to visit the most. And yeah, that is the one. Yeah, that's the one we can't say the name of down in North Carolina because it's a ship and it's a ship and Masonic museum. Okay. So like all their stuff, it's like a lot of stuff from like shipping history, shipwrecks, things to do with the ocean. It's right on the ocean. You take a boat to it. You get greeted by these nice old people. And they have stuff from the Masonic temples too.
Okay. Sold.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll be my next vacation.
There you go.
Yeah.
All I'm going on vacation. Can I talk about the vacation I'm going on?
Sure.
So I made another trip around the sun and my darling husband got me and we kind of work a lot. So we don't take like big vacations. We actually, honestly, like we don't even really see each other that much because he works way too much. So we are going for a day and a half to New Orleans to stay in a haunted hotel and go on a ghost hunt, which I thought was just a really nice birthday present.
That's a fabulous birthday present. Isn't that nice? I don't want you to overdo it by going on vacation for a whole 36 hours, Amelia.
We will arrive in New Orleans at 10 p.m. on Friday night, and we will be leaving at noon on Sunday. So literally a day and a half.
I hope you have a really fun time.
Me too. I hope I see a gator.
A what?
A gator.
Aren't those in Florida?
And they haven't been in Louisiana, down by the bayou.
Okay.
When you go to Mexico, are you going to try to see the Mexican woman in white?
No.
All right.
I'm going to try to see the ocean and not think about work and just be warm and snuggly and dive in the pool when I get too warm.
Ooh.
Maybe go see a show or two.
Cool.
You know, fun stuff. Please send us an email. We love your emails. Even though we haven't read any of your emails yet, because, you know, for us, it's still the beginning of August, and we will start reading your emails once we get into the episodes that are kind of up to date. ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. You can visit our website, ghosthuntinginnewengland.com, which I think was updated through season 3. Have we got any season 4 updates in there?
I don't think so. No, I'm going and doing season 2.
Okay.
I'm not even really doing it by seasons anymore. I'm just putting up stories that are good.
Okay, fair enough. Reach out to us on social media. We are on, let's see, Instagram is Amelia's favorite, Ghost Hunting in New England. We are on the facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland. We are on Twitter, Ghost Hunting NE. Also, please
Follow us on Twitter. Jeez Louise. I was listening to the Unbelievers podcast the other day. They're like, yeah, we have, they're coming up on, they're doing great. They're fabulous. They're doing wonderful. They're coming up on 1,000 Twitter followers. I'm like, woo-hoo. Dang it. I can't even get to 200. Jeez.
Well, it's because you keep deleting it.
I haven't deleted it once. I delete my personal ones. I delete ones under the name Amelia. But what I've started doing is I just write my own stuff under Ghost Hunting because I want a Twitter so badly.
Yeah.
I don't have any Twitter followers. Remember, I make one.
Ghost Hunting NE on Twitter is actually Amelia. And so like, if you just want random updates of what goes on in Amelia's life, follow Ghost Hunting NE on Twitter.
Yeah.
If you want to know stuff that goes on in the show, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, send us emails, join our mailing list off the website.
Join our mailing list.
Yeah. And you'll get emails whenever something gets updated somewhere. Yeah.
If we update it.
Ever.
Right. Maybe you won't get an email. Who knows?
All right. Beep, 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 boop, 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 boop. And as always,
happy hunting!